Well, tomorrow, 5 o'clock, it's graduation at Park City High School. In the studio with a look at the class of 2017, I have Principal Bob O'Connor. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Leslie.
So, ceremony starts promptly at 5. When do the gates open?
The gates will open right around 4. It's first come, first serve seating. I wish we could allow people to come in and reserve seats, but it's such a well-attended event, we just can't.
Yeah. So parking is always an issue. Any recommendations?
Come early. There's always room at Treasure Mountain Junior High, and it's a short walk from there.
Okay. So how many graduates do we have?
We have roughly about 390 graduates. There's 393 students in the class at this time. And we currently, from our data, have a 97.7 graduation rate.
So that's good news.
That is good news. The state will come back and recalculate that by adding in students that attended Park City High School in 9th, 10th, 11th grade. And if those students moved away, they'll count those as not graduates. So it could drop a little bit according to the state.
Okay. For those three, I mean, are they pretty close? I mean,
we have a handful of kids that are really close. They're working right now to remediate some credit, and we hope they're going to get there.
Okay. Let's see. Who do we have as valedictorian?
Kieran Ahearns is our top student in the class. Kieran's done a great job taking AP classes to get that weighted GPA.
What was the final GPA?
Off the top of my head, I don't know that.
Okay. And then the salutatorian will be whom?
I don't have that right now. We're still sorting grades and calculating that.
Oh, wow. So is it all based on GPA, huh?
Yes.
Okay. And then, so that's done by administration as opposed to some kind of
our
vote
counseling
by students.
Office, yes.
Yeah, okay. Any idea who else will be speaking?
Xander will be speaking on behalf of the senior class, Babe Miller, Ryan Croce will also be speaking on behalf of his class.
Okay. Those are what, high school, the
Student officers and kids that were voted in.
Okay. So what can you say about the class of 17? You've had them, what, for 3 years?
It's an amazing group, and they're heading to schools all over the country, from Seattle to Miami, from Boston to San Diego, and everywhere in between. We do have about 60% of our students stay in-state. But 73% of our students report they're going to a 2 or 4 year post-high school education plan.
Okay. So, as we know, college isn't for everyone. And for those kids who may not be interested or just not ready at this point, how can the high school counselors direct them?
There's apprenticeship programs that they're steered towards. And other options. But this is the first time that I can remember in 20 years that we have students representing every branch of the armed services.
Wow. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
I can. We have 2 students joining the Army, 2 students joining the Marines, one student joining the Navy, 3 going into the Air Force, and 1 going into the Coast Guard.
Very impressive.
I'll read their names at the graduation speech.
Okay. And are we talking like going to Annapolis, I mean the Air Force Academy and things like that?
We have a student that has been waitlisted for Annapolis. She's going into a prep program for the Navy, yes.
Wonderful. And in terms of just, you know, you always have some kind of anecdotal comments about the individual class. I mean, what could you say about these kids?
It's a great group of kids. They had some fun yesterday at the high school. They did have a prank that they moved some furniture around the school. At my request, they came back and cleaned up everything and put everything back where it went, where it was supposed to be, and continued to have fun in the parking lot with the concert.
Yeah, I saw the photo with a bunch of just chairs and desk with kind of a cutout of you right in the middle, kind of trapped.
Yeah, they enjoyed putting that on top.
Again, that's just something to be expected and pretty harmless at this point.
It was.
Yeah.
Good
All right.
fun.
Anything else, Bob, that you'd like to say?
No, I think that's it.
Okay. Well, again, graduation, Park City High School, tomorrow at 5 o'clock. Best recommendation, of course, get there early. Parking is always a challenge if you have an opportunity to carpool, take the bus, ride your bike. Always a good option to do that as well. Again, congratulations to class of 2017.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 7:47. KPCW News Time now, 8:13. Good morning. Well, the Summit County Council meeting yesterday at the Rich and Services Building in the studio with a recap of the meeting. County Council Member Glenn Wright. Good morning, Glenn.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's start first with the denial of a grant to the Adaptive Paralympic Organization that was requested by Dave Mickles. Why did you agree with your colleagues that this needed to be turned down?
Well, just the legal description of the of his organization. It clearly didn't fit the description that's in both the county code and the state state law on that particular issue. If we were to start giving out grants without following those laws, we could get audited by the state and be severely punished.
Yeah, you did ask Attorney Dave Thomas what might happen if we bent the rules a bit, and that was his response.
Yeah, personally, I'd like to have more flexibility, but if we don't, we don't.
So is there a way to change it, or does he need to change the mission of his organization?
We think there's probably some other avenues where he can get grant money. So one of the volunteers from the RAP committee, Connie Nielsen, said she would help him on that.
Okay. Let's see other topics on the agenda. You received some briefings on the water runoff situation in the fire season. Mm-hmm. Any news of flooding at this point?
Nothing major. Chris Crowley has indicated, he gave us a report from the hydrologist, Brian McInerney. We're expecting peak flows this week. If we get through the next few days, we should be in pretty good shape. I drove out to Oakley myself on Wednesday morning just to eyeball it, and we were just running pretty full out there. Talked to one of the residents out there, and he's got a couple of layers of sandbags on the banks by his house. He told me he thinks some neighbors are going to get a little bit of water in, but at this point, doesn't seem to be anything major happening. The flood maps for that area show that the 100-year flood in that area is very wide and very shallow. So once the river overflows the banks, there could be extensive but fairly low-level flood damage.
Yeah, and this was before your time, but I know that after the last flooding episode, we went in there and actually did some cleanup work to try and avoid that in the future. Sounds like it's working.
It looks like it's okay because it's flowing fast. I didn't see any obstructions.
Okay. What about the fire season? Any updates there?
Yeah, looks like it should be, according to our fire marshal, a average season. The downside is the moisture has grown the grass, and the grass is creeping up the mountain a little higher. The good news, we've got pretty high water content in the forest. The snow is still melting, so the longer the snow, we have snow up there, and the better it is. This is our driest month from a humidity standpoint. So, once we get through June, we don't get we don't get as low humidity as we do, particularly during June. So,
monsoon
overall,
season.
They're talking an average fire season. But anything can happen.
What does that mean then for fireworks? I think the county's taken the position that you just do whatever the state fire marshal tells you to do.
At this point, we have no plans to restrict fireworks, but things can change.
All right. You attended the Park City, Summit County, Wasatch County, Heber City Council meeting. It sounds like what we heard from City Manager Diane Foster. You were impressed that these four groups are talking together about affordable housing and transportation.
Yeah. I think for the first time in many years, I think our communities are really coming together on those issues, and I think we have some opportunities to work together. we were giving Heber City some advice on how to advance affordable housing programs. And we also brought up the idea of working together to improve traffic, particularly out in the 41 and 248 area. They're going to be running Jordanelle Parkway into Browns Canyon in the next few years. We have transit plans to use the park and ride out in that area. I think we would love to have a better interchange at 40 and 248. And the thought is that Summit and Wasatch County working together is a much more powerful influence on the legislature and the governor than either of us working by ourselves.
Okay. Wasatch County or Heber City have any plans for affordable housing as ambitious? Certainly probably is not as Park City.
They're starting to think about it. They have some market rate of affordable housing right now. But our discussion with them was, well, it's market rate now, but you can be in this. And they see that they're going to be in the same position as Park City in a few years where with escalating home prices. So, we gave them some advice on deed restrictions and various things like that. So we'll see how they go. What was positive we got from their planning director was the city planning department and the city council has increased density in some places in Heber City for affordable housing, market rate affordable housing.
There are thousands of units that have been built and or approved near the Jordanelle. What, any idea what the effect is going to be if all of those people or really, I mean, it's really Park City South is what it's become. Yeah.
And I think that's somewhere where opening a door to common discussion is going to help us because we have to treat that area as kind of a common area. I think you start in the area around Browns Canyon and Stock Lumber and all the growth that's going on there and some proposals in Summit County. And, I think ultimately we're going to have to work together to solve some of those issues.
Does that just mean more meetings?
Probably.
Okay. During council comment, you suggested a resolution supporting the Paris Accord. Is this moral support, or would the county do something a little bit more specific?
I hope we'll do something more specific. We started our strategy discussions a couple of months ago, and we'll be discussing environmental issues in about 2 weeks. So I would like us to take some concrete actions, and I think there's sentiment on the council for that.
All right. Let's see, the Aspen Creek Crossing, it's a really complicated insular issue, but there was an interesting question about the council vote, and thanks to Rick Bruff, he was able to condense this down here.
Good luck with that.
Aspen Creek Crossing, which has about 19 lots, an approval in 2003, restricted the homes to a certain square footage, but on the question of how do you calculate the square footage, the county planning department made some mistakes, and there have been inconsistencies over the years, so in looking for options for a solution. You favored one option, and you got outvoted 2-1 by Chris mm-hmm. Robinson and Kim Carson, who favored another option. So what were you supporting?
Well, not only was the council divided, but the Planning Commission was divided. The report that came to us was a 4-3 vote, and I kind of sided with the 3 on the Planning Commission. I think my point was that we're setting a precedent to give a little more square feet for each of the houses that are still to be built there. And in doing so, we're really changing the development agreement for the entire area. Just my comment to the appellant there was that they have problems, but I don't think the county needs to solve their problem by making larger changes in the development agreement. I personally looked at their problem as a failure of their due diligence. But on the other hand, I think Kim and Chris were of the opinion that it was a fairly minor thing and, let's give them a break. And it doesn't really, at this point, doesn't really affect too many houses. In a lot of ways, you can see from the council and the Planning Commission, it was kind of a coin flip and it was a real messy, long, convoluted discussion about it because of the history of the area.
Two council members were absent, so the vote has to come back to be memorialized as an ordinance. So when Doug Clyde and Roger Armstrong come back, are you going to be able to persuade them to your point of view?
Oh, I have no idea. Well, tune in next week.
Okay. Anything else, Glenn?
I think that's about it.
Okay. Hey, thanks for your time. It's 8:23. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, as we've reported, the Park City Board of Education agreed to move forward with a two-bill schedule starting in 2018. On the phone with me, I have Caitlin O'Connor. She's the data specialist for the Park City School District. Good morning to you, Caitlin.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on, Leslie.
Yeah, so if you would just start with a little bit of an overview of the survey, how many you heard from and whether you think you've got a good sampling of those who are impacted by any decision here.
Sure. So we had about 3,644 respondents to the survey, which actually is a great sampling, a very strong response rate considering the size of a Park City community. I was impressed and encouraged by this response rate. And really applaud the community's involvement and engagement with the start time surveys as a way to make their voice known.
Yeah, so it was a voluntary survey, so anyone could answer it, right? I mean, even myself who doesn't have a student in a school?
Absolutely. So the survey was originally sent out directly via email to Park City District staff, parents, and students, but then a link was also posted on the webpage. So you're right, even community members, there were a handful of respondents who reported being Park City community members who do not currently have children in the district, but who would still probably likely be impacted by a change in the school start time.
All right. So did you hear equally, do you think, from students, staff, and parents?
Definitely. We had a very strong, we have about, if I run the numbers really quickly, we have about 2,800 families in the district. Of course, some of those families have multiple students in the district, but the representation of students and parents that we got was very strong. I would venture to say, you know, that we heard from at least one family member from each family in the community, just based on the sheer number of people that responded.
Yeah, I mean, did we have the survey in Spanish as well? Did we get to hear from our Latino community?
We did, and that response rate was as stronger than any survey that we've ever sent out, which was encouraging. We had about 50 respondents in Spanish fill out the survey.
Great. So, do any of these cohorts then have a stronger weight to the response, or it was just one vote is equal to all?
That's a great question. We definitely did not give any weight to any specific stakeholders. The weight would have taken place informally in the fact that parents responded very strongly, as did students, and then staff members in the district was very strong as well. Community members without children, of course, fewer of those people responded. So just by the sheer fact that fewer of them responded, their input would have been weighted less, but we didn't actually statistically weight any stakeholder groups' opinions more strongly over the other.
Yeah. So were there any significant trends that you can report in any of these different groups?
Sure. So the trends that became most apparent in the survey responses were when we looked at those preferences for the different stakeholder groups that we just talked about. So, for example, a significant proportion of parents that were surveyed preferred that some change to school start times take place, although their opinions were pretty evenly divided among the three options proposed. Staff, however, on the other hand, a greater majority of them preferred that no change take place compared to the options proposed. And then students were pretty evenly split between half of the students preferring no change and the other half of students preferring some change, but again, were pretty evenly divided among the three options proposed.
Okay, and I'm just going to speculate that it's the parents trying to wake the kids up that have had enough of it, given their strong...
given some of the qualitative open-ended responses, that is part of it, but what also came through very clearly was the community's awareness of the research that does say that later start times for specifically adolescent students does seem to be healthier. So I think that was also a part of people's input and opinion.
Yeah, and then with the staff then, because they're the ones that are trying to, you know, get through to the sleepy kid, I'm surprised that they really were split on really or supported no change. Any reflections from them on that?
Sure. So when I say a significant proportion of them preferred no change, I wanted to emphasize and did emphasize that that was just over the three options that were proposed. There were still about 38% to 40% of staff who did prefer one of the options proposed. I think what it came down to was possibly people were preferring no change over the three options that were proposed, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so the data shows a divide in the community over start times. 60%, about 60% saying a change is good, but among those, very evenly split about what that option looks like. And then 40% saying they're happy to keep things the way they are. So I think what I heard from the school board is they're going to go along with what the research has to say, despite the 40%. Is there any way to kind of suss out a thread of what that all means, though?
Sure. So as we've already discussed, and as is pretty evident in the report, statistically and based purely on the numbers, the community was pretty divided on the issue. However, when we looked at, there were 400 pages of qualitative comments given by the respondents to the surveys. One of the common threads that became very obvious was just the community's desire and passion to ultimately do what is best for students in terms of safety, health, well-being. So some of the examples were from the community comments were that a lot of parents and staff and community members mentioned that some of the proposed start times would have meant elementary school students getting on the bus too early and waiting potentially in the dark. But then people were also concerned about late school ending too late to make time for extracurricular activities. So the common thread that really became glaringly obvious in reading the community comments was that people do want to do what's best for students. I just think that people were kind of torn on which schedule specifically time-wise made the most sense.
All right. So the school board has made a motion on proceeding now with a two-bell schedule, which wasn't even on the survey. Do we need another survey to understand what the public thinks about that option?
So I try to be very mindful and sensitive of the fact that people survey fatigue is a real thing, and people are very sensitive to being over-surveyed. So I would say, at least going forward, that surveys are not necessarily the only way to collect community input. Based on, like I already mentioned, the 400 pages of community comments that came in were very enlightening into the very specific reasons for which community members had issues with the various options that were proposed. And a lot of that had to do with all of the options proposed were three-bell schedules, which meant some of the schools starting very early and then the latest school starting what people were deeming as too late. So I think that what the board was trying to do was make a decision to move forward with an option that did try to accommodate a lot of that community input that had been gathered already.
Yeah. So after looking at all this data, I mean, we had seen that the most preferred option summary page show that there's really no consensus on any of the options. As a statistician, did you make any recommendations to the school board about what to do?
I didn't make any specific recommendations because the numbers were so divided. However, what my recommendation would be, just as a researcher, as in most cases and in almost any circumstances, especially one like this where the numbers seem to be so divided, I would always make a recommendation to go with what an evidence-based option that's supported by empirical research.
Okay. Caitlin, any other thoughts about the results here?
I don't think so. Thank you for having me on. This was clearly this survey and along with the community input that we've received in other ways has just enlightened and highlighted how important and hot of a topic this is for our community. And I just really appreciate everybody speaking up and voicing their opinions.
Okay. Caitlin, thanks for your time. This Get Out and Play has grown up and what was renamed to Activate for a middle school program now making its way to the junior high school. In the studio with details about Youth Sports Alliance's Activate program, I have Heather Sims, the Director of Youth Programs for YSA, along with Heather Vickery, a parent, and Ben Myers, a student at Treasure Mountain. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Heather, do you want to just begin by telling us what Activate is?
Yes, Activate is a program currently at Ecker, and as you said, it's grown up from Get Out and Play, and we have activities that are more suitable for the age group at Ecker, which was 11 to 13. But as we know, the Treasure Mountain, in the state of Utah, the after-school teams don't start until ninth grade. So there's this whole group of kids at Treasure Mountain, the eighth graders, who don't have anything after school. So we are now taking the program that's been pretty successful at Ecker. It's been its first year. We had 278 kids and 44 scholarships, and we're going to take that to Treasure Mountain, and we're going to do some sports that are specifically for that age group. Park City Rowing are going to join us, and we're going to do some pottery classes. So it's not just sports. It's about getting kids engaged and taking part in activities.
Okay, so it's always on Fridays?
Actually, the Treasure Mountain get out on Mondays early, and so we're going to do it on Mondays at Treasure.
All right, and so when does that season begin? Next school year, or are we talking about something this summer?
No, we're going to start in the school year, it'll go from the middle of September to about the middle of May. And, you know, we're trying to get all these kids that have nothing to do on Monday afternoons and provide access to engaging, fun activities.
Yeah, so what are some of the courses?
So we're going to do action photography, hopefully with Vail at the mountain. We're going to do pottery. We're going to do some drawing. We're doing Photoshop techniques. We're doing climbing, mountain biking. So some of the programs are still the same from the current Activate program. We're just looking at growing them and being specific to that age group.
Yeah. So since it's an after-school program, for those kids who only have the bus as a way home, do they not get to participate?
So the good thing about Park City is that we do have free buses. And so those kids are of an age where they can get on the bus and get home. So we're trying to provide access for everybody. And so there may be some kids that might be a factor. But hopefully there'll be a situation where parents could pick them up. You know, it's an intro program. Most of the programs are intros and they're 4 weeks. So hopefully that will be a factor. But yeah. Transportation is definitely one thing that puts people off.
Yeah. And just looking at this past year's schedule, I mean, I saw that prices can range from maybe 10 to 25 bucks a session. So if somebody wants to join but doesn't have that kind of money, what?
So we do offer scholarships. Yes, we do offer scholarships. And actually, we're one of the finalists in the Women's Giving Fund. And so we're up for a $25,000 grant right now, which will help provide some of these kids the opportunity to do some of the activities. So if you are a Women's Giving Fund member, please vote for us.
So Ben, what courses have you participated in?
I haven't participated in any courses yet, but I'm excited to participate in them next year for my ninth grade year. Because we get out after school early on Mondays, which really doesn't make much sense, most people don't have much to do on Mondays. They either go home or hang out with friends, and I think that a lot of courses would be a lot of fun to do on Mondays, things like mountain biking in the very early and very late season of this program during September and May would be a lot of fun, things like rock climbing and even some of the more obscure things like frisbee golf and a bunch of the indoors things for the wintertime, things like Photoshop and pottery, stuff like that. I think that would be a lot of fun to participate in next year.
Yeah, so as a kid at Ecker Hill, you didn't notice these were going on?
It was not there while I was there. Mm. I left the school the year that it started, so I was in an unlucky place for that. But with any luck, I'll be able to participate in it next year when it moves to Treasure for my ninth grade year.
Okay, last day of school for you, huh?
Tomorrow will be the last day of school, yep.
Oh, okay.
Very excited.
And then Heather Vickery, tell me about, in terms of a parent, what do you like about the program?
Well, as a parent, I think it's an amazing program. I've watched my daughter try new things. I've watched her grow in confidence. It's a very safe environment to try and explore new things. You don't have to be an elite sport athlete. You don't have to be great at anything, and it's okay. And it's a very positive, nurturing experience. Great way to be busy after school and be off the social media, be off hanging around, and just try new things with positive people.
Yeah. What did she like? Anything in particular?
Well, she really liked the social hour at the PC Mark. And they had a new program this year through the Kimball Art Center where someone came to Ecker and taught the kids some specialized drawing techniques, which was an amazing experience.
Okay. So when are you going to have the schedule up?
So I'm trying to get the full schedule as quick as possible so that we can actually start promoting it in the summer. We have a lot of verbal commitments right now from some of the organizations in town. And so once we have the contract, we'll put that up on our website, the ysaparkcity.org. And, you know, we really are excited about getting these kids involved. And as Stacy said, that it's away from the screens and getting kids engaged in supervised activities that are fun. And so we are trying to get it up as soon as possible so that the current kids that are going from 7th to 8th will be excited, and the kids that, like Ben, that are going from 8th to 9th will find out about it.
Great. Okay. Hey, thanks for, coming in.
All right.
Once again, Resac Utah hosting its native plant sale. On the phone with more details, I have volunteer Linda Kars. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning, Leslie.
So the sale happening Saturday morning, 9 to noon at Recycle Utah. Why is this an event that the Recycling Center hosts?
Mostly because even though it's known as Recycle Utah, it's really the Park City Conservation Association, and with the main focus on water conservation, and you know, recycling plays into that. So this is our way to try and educate people on the importance of the plant element, the landscaping element of water conservation.
Okay. So let's see. You'll be once again working with Wildland Nursery. Basically, they know what grows here?
Exactly. Wildland Nursery is actually located in central Utah, and they've been, the owner, Jeanette, has been really for, I gosh, it's almost been 15 years, I think, that we've been doing this. And so she has a vast wealth of knowledge of what kind of plants grow in our lovely high desert environment.
Give us an idea of what kind of plants will be available.
Well, we've got perennials, shrubs, and there'll be probably a few trees. They're a little harder to transport, but mostly a lot of shrubs. I mean, the flowers are beautiful, and I love the flowers. We've got penstemons and globe mallow and others that thrive in our environment. But the shrubs really form the structure of your garden, and they look good all year round. And we've got some real winners, like the Apache plume, the fern bush, the sumacs. The sumacs are things that you see growing on the hillsides. The others are more native to central Utah, but I have them in my garden, and they really thrive here, and they really are low water use. To no water use.
Wow. Okay. So are these sold at retail prices, or is there some kind of deal?
They are. It's not a fundraiser. It's really an educational opportunity for us to let people know how you can have a garden in Park City, and it can still be beautiful without the, you know, just the incredible drain on our resources. The water that we irrigate our gardens with is treated water for, it's potable, it's for us to drink, and that costs a lot of money. So trying to cut down on that. And so they are still, and Jeanette has to transport them all up here. She's a, you know, we try, and what we're trying to encourage is for people to get excited about this plant material and then ask their local nurseries. Park City Nursery, which recently changed hands, I went by and met the new owner, and she's got a nice, you know, selection of natives as well. So we're just really trying to focus on getting the word out here, out there, and, you know, encourage people to use these plants and feel comfortable with it.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to let us know?
No, it's just, you know, we'll be there 9 to noon. This year, actually, in past years, we have been, in the past few years, we've been in that parking lot next to Recycle Utah, but I think the ski resort's using that. So we'll be actually in the parking lot. So it will be busy, but please don't be discouraged. And we are there with all the plants, 9 o'clock. We've got several volunteers who can give you some guidance depending on where in the area you live. And we're just really excited to share this with everyone.
Okay, Linda, hey, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Leslie. Have a great day.
Linda Kars with Recycle Utah. KPCW News Time now, 8:58.